This is Sea Change Radio, covering the shift to sustainability. I'm Alex Wise.
When consumers change their behavior, big business, big government, both turn on a dime.
Both of this week's guests on Sea Change Radio are entrepreneurs who've tapped into a new eco-conscious consumer class. First, we hear from Brian Welch, a Kansas organic farmer, writer, and publisher of Mother Earth News and the Utney Reader. We discuss Welch's belief that environmental messaging, driven by a positive vision, is more effective than the fear-based messaging that's so common in the environmental movement. Next, I talk with Steve Glenn, the CEO of Living Homes, a green prefab construction company that takes a unique, more efficient approach to the home building process. I'm joined now on Sea Change Radio by Brian Welch. He's an entrepreneur, organic farmer, and publisher of some publications which I'm sure a lot of our listeners are familiar with, like the Utney Reader, Mother Earth News. Brian, welcome to Sea Change Radio.
Thanks, Alex. Good to be here.
In your book, Beautiful and Abundant, you espouse a quote-unquote new capitalism. Maybe if you can define new capitalism for us, that would be great.
Yeah, capitalism is a relatively recent phenomenon, obviously, and I think of it as a very young human social phenomenon. I mean, it's been a remarkably effective machine during these last couple hundred years since the dawn of the Industrial Revolution. But I think it's fair to expect that it's going to evolve into something more sophisticated, and I think consumers are helping it evolve in that direction these days by being rather more demanding about the benefits that capitalist institutions confer upon the participants in those institutions. So what I mean is, today, consumers are looking at products and services and then learning a little bit about the manner in which they were created and demanding of corporations that they create benefit for human participants and the natural environment at all the stages along the cycle between the extraction of raw resources and the delivery of a product or a service to a group of human beings. And I think that's natural and obviously desirable and doesn't make it any less capitalism. People on both sides of the argument love to sort of hearken back to Adam Smith and make their various claims about whether it's good or evil. I think it's neither. I think it's a system that helps us distribute resources and helps us innovate, helps us create fairness and beauty in the world. And the communication, the information base about how companies behave is becoming so much richer and more accessible so rapidly that that also is sort of supercharging the changing landscape of capitalism, the changing landscape of business. So it's an exciting time. And when I talk about new capitalism, I'm just talking about a capitalism that defines value to include the benefits, all the benefits created by capitalist institutions to all the people and the natural environments that they touch.
Obviously, you have a more positive vision for the future than a lot of other futurists. So we've had people with much less sanguine views, like James Howard Kunstler, who thinks we're pretty much screwed. Is your positive vision global? I'm thinking more of a worker in a Chinese factory or somebody who's just struggling to get clean water in Africa to their village. Where do you see new capitalism helping to lift these people out of their states?
Well, I wouldn't describe myself as more sanguine than Mr. Kunstler necessarily. I would describe myself as a person who has greater confidence in our capacity to change than a lot of people who talk about environmental issues. You know, if you look back over the history of humanity,
he's pretty dark.
Yeah, he's very dark. Furthermore, I mean, my mission in life has been to engage large groups of people in this process of change. And scaring them into engagement has not worked. I mean, 40 years of ardent attempt by people like Mr. Kunstler and others has been relatively ineffective. It's still highly controversial to believe that we should preserve the natural environment in more or less its natural state. You know, so we haven't gotten the message across by trying to scare people. My belief is that we can engage more people by pointing out the kind of terrific world we can build, a beautiful and abundant planet for many future generations, and then engaging their creativity, their innovation, their energy in the process of creating that planet. That's more or less the direction of all of my work, whether it's in my business or through my writing or whatever. When you talk about, you know, Chinese workers and the capacity, you know, how does the new capitalism serve them? Well, Apple Computer, one of the world's largest corporations, most powerful corporations, is now engaging outside auditors as of about 2 weeks ago to go into its factories and check on the working conditions there. That's brand new. Why did that come about? Because consumers are better informed, consumers are paying attention, and they're criticizing the practices of a company far away on the other side of the planet, building products in a way that seems to create unnecessary stress for the workers in that country. Golly, what a great example of a new capitalist impulse. And Apple obviously realized the necessity of changing its practices and responding to criticism of consumers. You know, one of the things that I find somewhat frustrating about the traditional approach to issues like this by my peers who've been, you know, I mean, I'm a 52-year-old environmentalist, and other people who are in my business and of my age have a tendency to sit around criticizing big business or criticizing government and talking about how evil and corrupt it all is, when you don't need to look very far at all to see that when consumers change their behavior, big business, big government, both turn on a dime. And so where we've really fallen down is in convincing the vast majority of consumers and voters to buy and vote with their conscience and to come to invest the little bit of labor it takes to learn about these issues so that their activities can reflect their value system. What I'm about to say could mean the world's disaster, could change your joy and laughter to tears and pain. That love's the need of love today. Don't delay, send your
To listen to Sea Change Radio anytime, anyplace, just subscribe to our free podcast. Simply follow the link from seachangeradio.com or search for us in the iTunes podcast directory.
This is Alex Wise on Sea Change Radio. I'm speaking with entrepreneur Brian Welch. He runs Ogden Publications. You're a farmer in Kansas, and Thomas Frank penned a book that's very well known now, and saying, "What's the matter with Kansas?" And he talks about how farmers like yourself, some of them a little more industrial scale farmers, have been co-opted by these quote unquote wedge issues to vote consistently against their own best interests. You mentioned how people are aware of issues and becoming more and more aware of what's important to them. How can we re-engage people politically to actually vote for a greater good community-wise rather than just focusing on these wedge issues?
Sure. Well, let's talk about it, about two different elements of what you're discussing. One of them is the inclination of people simply to vote, dress and consume in kind of a tribal way. And, you know, most folks who farm, and I'm not one of these people, inherited the land on which they live. They've lived in the same community their entire lives. And it's a community in which conformity serves the excellent purpose of allowing people to get along and work for the common good over the course of many lifetimes. It is inherently conservative. The adventurous members of farming communities tend to leave and go do other things. And the people who are left are the most conservative members of their families. So there's a cultural element in this that's very hard to get past. And I think we just have to take that for granted. But when farmers have increasing numbers of local customers, when farmers are in the business of selling to local people who care about how their food is produced, which is more and more the activity of farmers across the country, all over North America, then farming politics change, and the farmers find themselves drawn to organizations that are creating the kind of local fairness and that are operating in the kind of enlightened way that confers more immediate benefits to the local community. And so Joel Salatin, our friend and the contributor to the magazines, is a classic case of a farmer who inherited his farm, who farms the land that previous generations of his family farmed, but who does so in an eloquently enlightened way, and then subsequently writes about it, sells largely to local customers, and makes a huge difference in his community and through his writing in the world. So I believe that is changing, but it would be a mistake to discredit the underlying cultural issue that was addressed in the book that you cited. There is that small towns in the middle of the country are places where the conservative impulse is stronger than it is in the average city.
That's interesting, the inherited and the cultural, the generational transfer of farms. People don't usually think of that as playing a role in what makes people conservative or progressive. Speaking of conservative, the Republican non-Mitt Romney flavor of the month, Rick Santorum, was recently discussing his view on the environment and how it was a very clever little dance. He was trying to say that instead of the quote-unquote radical environmentalism of President Obama, which I think a lot of our listeners would roll their eyes at, he believes in being a steward of the earth, but in the same time that God has imbued him with the idea that we need to also use the earth for man, and the earth is for man, and man is not here to serve the earth. And God and politics aside, how do you think that kind of message resonates with Kansas farmers? It's always a tricky dance that one has to make. I mean, any kind of buying decision we're making, that whether it be the fertilizer we use or the cars we drive.
Again, Rick Santorum is making a spiritual point, not a political point. And whether we like it or not, yes, the earth is going to serve humanity until humanity no longer lives on earth. It's the nature of our human psychology that we make use of the planet and that we use it for our own purposes, just as, you know, if the coyote had the capacity to spread as we have and to wield power in the way we have, the coyote would be using it for the coyote race's purposes. That's a biological fact. But what I think is, I love wilderness, and wilderness, undisturbed nature, is in effect the stone tablet on which God has written his plan. And preserving that stone tablet, preserving unspoiled nature, there's a deep spiritual mandate to preserve nature in more or less its original form. And so I fundamentally agree with Rick Santorum, yes. I do. It will serve humanity, but I think it's very much in humanity's interest, very much in humanity's interest, to not only preserve it in a relatively healthy state, but to preserve a lot of nature in its original state, relatively uninfluenced by human activity, because it is on that stone tablet that God wrote his plan.
So it sounds more like a quibble over the definition of enrichment. When Rick Santorum is talking about man needs to, the earth needs to serve man, he may be thinking of the enriching oil and other natural resources that man can tap, which really is more of a corporate view of how we can tackle the earth as opposed to preserve it. And you're talking about enrichment being able to sit on a Walden Pond-like environment and to be enriched spiritually by having clean water and clean air to breathe and beauty around you.
Well, you know, I don't think it's all that ivory tower to think that we need unspoiled nature to experience for infinite future human generations. I don't consider that at all la-di-da. I think of it as a really fundamental need and a very strong cultural, political, and yes, spiritual mandate. And unfortunately, you know, big corporations and big government all operate on a career length time horizon, if you know what I mean. All decisions and all discussions are formed with the eye to the individual's career. And so any value whose maturity is realized beyond the length of the present career is considered impractical, is considered, you know, to be part of, to be up there in its ivory tower, or some is given some pejorative definition. I think that's if there's one thing that I would identify that's wrong with popular discussion in the popular media, is that it fails to acknowledge that we're trapped in this career length time horizon in 99% of our public discussions and our public debate in the forum, in the popular forum. And I'm urging people to think beyond that and to discuss in frank terms, what kind of world do we want our great-grandchildren to live in? That's important to me. I have grandchildren, and I can picture my great-grandchildren, and I can visualize the world where I want them to live, and I need to take action today to preserve the world, that world, to guarantee that world for those future generations. I personally can't think of anything more important nor anything more practical than that.
This is Alex Wise on Sea Change Radio. I'm speaking with entrepreneur Brian Welch. He runs Ogden Publications, which focuses on the environment and sustainability. Brian, as a green entrepreneur, maybe you can share with us some of your insights that you've learned starting up a business and making those choices between conservation and profitability, and how you've been able to walk that delicate balance.
The fact of the matter is, if you and I parachuted into the most conservative town in the most conservative state in the United States, the first or second door we knocked on would be answered by someone who cares very deeply about humanity, who cares very deeply about the future of the planet, the health of children, about clean air and clean water. These are values that are, you know, almost universally popular. We've unfortunately given in to speaking about them in tribal terminology and co-opting the ideas and speaking down to consumers and voters about these issues from on our high horses. And that's alienated a lot of people from these considerations. But the first and foremost, if you want to be successful as a quote-unquote green business person, start from where the customer is and what they already want, and then never, ever condescend to them. Always work to speak in a contagious, enthusiastic, joyful, and loving way to your clientele, and you'll find that joy and that love and that enthusiasm reflected back from them. But it never ever works to tell people that they need to consume your product because it's the right thing to do. And if they're not doing that, then by God, they're not doing the right thing. That's a marketing plan that never gets any air under its wings.
You're a publisher, and the publishing industry has been hard hit as the internet has taken a major portion out of the revenue that goes to traditional print media. You've been able to straddle both of these worlds. As your company continues to grow, Ogden Publications, how do you find that sweet spot in terms of being a conscientious business that focuses on environmental issues and becoming the man, so to speak?
Well, the fastest growing magazine in our family of magazines, the biggest one is Mother Earth News. The fastest growing one is a magazine called Grit, which was founded in 1882 in a small town in Pennsylvania, and has always been about rural lifestyles. And today, it's about how to grow your own food and how to find a local farmer that grows things that you want to buy that you aren't growing, and how to make your own pickles and do stuff for yourself. Self-reliance, environmental awareness, rural lifestyles is what it's about. It's growing very rapidly, and one of the reasons it's growing so rapidly is it has a big community of guest bloggers that drive traffic to the website. The single largest source of new subscribers to the print magazine is from that website. And it all comes back, I think, to our belief that our job is engaging passionate human imaginations in our discussions. The quality of those discussions is the core of our business. And we don't much care about the medium. Whatever medium allows us to touch more people, that's where we should be putting our energy. And we've always behaved in that way, I think, for the most part. And so as new opportunities have arisen in the digital era, our business has grown and we've achieved greater success. And the digital media is particularly adept at connecting with people on points of passion, particularly adept at finding like-minded people and bringing them together. So it's actually been a great time for us this last decade, and the benefits that we derive from the digital media have been escalating. So I think of the digital media as not being a competing media to our original print products, but an augmentation, and a very powerful one at that.
Organic farmer and publisher Brian Welch, thanks so much for being my guest on Sea Change Radio.
Alex, thanks for having me.
Follow the shift to sustainability with Sea Change Radio on Twitter at twitter.com/SeaChangeRadio and on our Facebook page.
My guest on Sea Change Radio is the CEO of Living Homes, Steve Glenn. Steve, welcome to Sea Change Radio.
Thank you. Happy to be on it.
Tell our listeners first what Living Homes is all about.
We are a designer builder of prefabricated, sustainably designed homes.
How does this differ from what people may know as a modular home or starting from scratch? Are you kind of in between there?
We're targeting a group of consumers. We think it's a large group. We think they're growing, who very much value design, health, and sustainability in the products they buy. So there are lots of companies that address the great value we place on form and functionality and on products that are built in a healthy and sustainable way. But the production home builders, the KB Homes, Lennars, Pulte's of the world, they don't build homes for these consumers yet. So our formula is get great world-class architects, integrate an extremely comprehensive environmental program, and then use factory production to make the homes we do better, quicker, cheaper, and with smaller ecological footprint than a standard site-built home.
And how does that work, the factory production? It looks like a fairly intensive process.
Well, we work with companies who build modular structures. So the home is built, it's like big Legos. It's built in pieces where one or more rooms are sort of built in a frame, and they're put on a flatbed, and they're shipped to a site, and they're assembled with a big crane, and then they're bolted or welded together. And by so doing, we're able to build much quicker, typically half to a third as long as the site-built home. We're able to reduce construction waste pretty dramatically, improve quality, and also reduce cost.
So how much does it generally cost to get to build one of these homes, Steve?
They range from 250 to 350 square foot on up. Smallest we've done today. Well, we've done some multifamily, but the smallest single family we've done is about a couple thousand square feet. So, half a million on up. We've got some new, much lower price product that'll be coming out soon that will reduce that pretty substantially.
Why would you go with living homes versus starting from scratch?
Well, the first reason actually has to do with design. You like our design. One of the lessons learned, I think, from the first energy crisis, 1.0, 70s, there were lots of great homes that were developed in reaction. But the design wasn't something that many people really was mainstream. Straw bale or underground, great from an ecological footprint standpoint, but not necessarily mainstream. So number one insight for us is, first and foremost, they need to be just great from a form and functionality standpoint. So that's the first thing. If that doesn't work for you, you shouldn't work with us. But from an ecological standpoint, we built the first LEED Platinum home in the nation. LEED is Leadership in Environmental and Energy Design. It's a green building certification program. You get points for things that make your homes more energy or water or resource efficient or better indoor air quality. And ours was the first ever to get their highest level of certification. We've done, we've had 8 more homes certified platinum. So we're one of the more experienced developers of homes at that level of environmental certification.
Steve, how do your homes compare to a much older home in terms of the integration of alternative energy?
It is absolutely the case that if you build a new home the right way, in general, it's going to be more energy efficient and perhaps even remarkably so versus an existing home. Absolutely, because of the insulation in the walls, how tight a building envelope it is, which means, is there leakage? It's going to happen in doors and windows, performance of the windows. The appliances, how energy efficient they are, the lights, how energy efficient they are, all that. Your heating system, we like to use solar thermal so that we can preheat the water. So all of those things ultimately impact what your energy use is. And yes, as you said, that can therefore impact how much solar panels you have to size.
Steve Glenn, the founder and CEO of Living Homes. People can go to livinghomes.net to learn more. Thanks so much for being my guest on Sea Change Radio.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Sway the future to the past and find what will endure.
You've been listening to Sea Change Radio. Our intro music is by Sanford Lewis, and our outro music is by Alex Wise. Additional music by Medeski Martin and Wood, Stevie Wonder, and John Martin. Sea Change Radio is made possible by support from Farm Fresh to You Organic Produce Delivery Service, connecting people to farms and leading the progressive change in America's food system. To learn more, go to farmfreshtoyou.com. Check out our website at seachangeradio.com. That's seachangeradio.com to stream or download the show or subscribe to our podcast. Visit our archives there to hear from Bill McKibben, Van Jones, Paul Hawken, and many others. And tune in to Sea Change Radio next week as we continue making connections for sustainability. For Sea Change Radio, I'm Alex Wise.